Good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Thursday, June 13th. Hope you're drying out okay. This is, of course, the Outer Spaces edition of our program. That means, as usual, Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florists is here. Doug, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. The storm didn't blow me away.
Didn't blow you away. Well, I'm very glad for that. I know it blew a lot of people away, a lot of stuff too. Oh,
those poor people on the north side of town and on up through Auburn and probably a little further than that, they got hit pretty good. But
yeah.
It didn't get us early on, and then in the middle of the night, it went south of us and went down to Ossian.
Well,
and
south
Bluffton.
Of you, south of you. I mean, we have a whole lot of folks in our listening area.
Well, that's right, south of me.
Yeah.
And so Laura's here today, and she said, too, that she was in the – we were in the eye of the storms, I guess. I don't know. They just didn't get us.
Yeah. And Laura Stein, as Doug just mentioned, is with us for a special edition of our program. Laura, we missed you last month, so we thought we'd have you on. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's always nice to be here. Sorry I couldn't be here a couple weeks ago, but I'm very happy to join you today.
We're very glad to have you. And Doug didn't get blown away. Did you get blown away last night?
Boy, we were up into the wee hours of the morning watching to make sure it didn't get us. When do you go to the basement? That was our question all night long. So we were kind of watching it.
Sometimes the basement comes to you.
Right. Yeah, I suppose that's true. We hope not.
we want to hear from you, of course. This is the Outer Spaces edition of our program. And if you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, call us, 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We do want to hear from you this hour. And we should mention, as usual, Laura Stein sent a few very colorful photos that we've posted on our Facebook page. So you can take a look at those and comment if you like as well. It's facebook.com/Midday Matters. I wanted to start this program kind of with a news item here, the storm. And, last week we got a whole lot of rain, I think 2 to 4 inches in parts of our listening area. I know my apartment got a little bit wet. My basement apartment did as well. And there's, with the rain last night, I mean, I know there's a bit of a risk for some folks, maybe their gardens, other plants in their backyards, to be flooded out, to be in trouble. And so I wanted to put the question to both of you. Laura, maybe we'll start with you first. How do you know when your plants have gotten too much beyond maybe splashing around when they're underwater, basically?
Right, right. You know, storms like this, and for the amount of rain we've gotten, we really have a key opportunity here. If you've just moved into your home, or if you're unfamiliar with the garden space that you have, this is a great time to really walk the yard and take a look at those areas that are holding water.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do then is that information will give you let you know what plants you can put in that area, because there certainly are plants, and these are ones that we recommend for rain gardens, that can take that wetter soil. Now, if you've got standing water for more than 24 hours, you know, that's a different subject. But if you've got really wet areas, but it drains away in the next day or so, that's really, those are a great place to put iris and lots of native shrubs and even trees and good native perennials that can use that area and help to clear and clean some of that water out. The rain gardens really do clean the water as it drains down into our streams and wetlands, that sort of thing. So it's really, that can be a great opportunity.
Doug, I want to put the same question to you here. I know you're especially a fan of growing vegetables in the garden. With potted plants, we talk about a lot on this program. Those pots theoretically should drain. Okay, I would think
absolutely. And
but
that's what I need to caution people about. If you have plants in the ground and you get this kind of rain, like Laura said, it'll probably soak in. And the remainder just disappears and it's fine. But if you're growing container plants, this is where the drainage hole comes in as a huge factor. If you don't have a drainage hole, your pot's full of water.
Mm-hmm.
and it has nowhere to go, and it's not going anywhere. The plant just doesn't soak up gallons and gallons of water. It has to go away. And so, first off, you always use containers with drainage holes. If you have containers with drainage holes, and a lot of people do, and yet they put a saucer underneath it, well, the saucer doesn't have a drainage hole. That's what the saucer's about. If your saucer's full of water, you'll have the same problem. The plants will be setting in water, even though it has a drainage hole, and you've got to get that saucer emptied out. So keep those two things in mind. Don't allow your plants, especially potted ones, to remain in water for long periods of time, or you'll start a rotting process that you don't see. It starts down in the root system, and you don't see it. And by the time you figure out something's wrong, that's when the leaves start turning yellow, falling off. I had a phone call yesterday. The same problem was happening to this lady's plant.
And by then, you're really not going to save,
well, it's going to be much
plant.
Tougher to fix that problem. If you suspect you have a container with no drainage hole and that it's full of water, first of all, how do you know? Lift it. Look at that pot, look at that plant, and envision in your mind, how heavy should that be? And when you reach down to lift it, if it feels like that pot's full of sand and you can't lift it, you got a water problem. So here's how you fix that. You take a stick of some sort, a dowel rod, something like that. You shove it down the edge of the pot all the way to the bottom, and then just kind of like you're digging a big round hole in a circular motion, just make yourself a good size hole from the bottom of the pot to the top. Then lay the whole pot over on its side, and the water can drain that way. Otherwise, you're just never going to get that water out of there, and you'll have a problem. So,
We want to hear from you, our listeners, today. If you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, please do give us a call. We want to hear from you this hour at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Send us a tweet, of course, that's at Midday Matters. And if you'd like to see Laura Stein's photos and maybe drop a note on our Facebook page as well, you can do that. It's facebook.com/MiddayMatters. Laura, as we just mentioned, as usual, you sent a few photos along and a bit of a topic for us to jump start on here. What'd you bring with you today?
I brought some photos, and I wanted to talk maybe about some color in the garden. I'd love to know if what some of our listeners' favorite colors are. You know, there's primary colors, and there's really bright colors, and then there's more subdued, kind of, I would say, almost masculine colors for that are... that are, you know, maroons and that sort of thing. Maybe more sophisticated, you could say.
Sure.
And then there's really subtle colors, which I always think go really nicely in a shade garden. But we can talk. I sent you some photos and thought it might be a nice thing to look at while you're on your lunch hour, perhaps. And I'd love to know what our listeners, some of their favorite colors are. Maybe they have a specific flower and they love it because of the color, or they love a color so they... plant intentionally flowers that will reflect that.
So we want to hear from you. The gauntlet has been thrown. What colors do you love to keep in your garden, in your backyard, elsewhere in your outer spaces? Do you like to mix in a certain way? Do you like brighter colors, more subtle colors? What do you do? Tell us. Share your story at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall where you can also see Laura's photos, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Doug, I know you were raring to get in there.
Yeah, you know, colors are a fun thing because, first of all, if you think it out too much, you'll mess yourself up, because almost never do I see two and three colors mixed that don't actually look good together. I mean, you might think, well, what goes with pink? Well, yellow and white and blue. But you know what else goes with pink? Another shade of pink. Some of the best looking pots I see are multiple shades of pink.
Of the same color.
All in one pot, and maybe just a splash or a hint of blue, like lobelia.
Yeah.
You know? Or a splash of white like that diamond frost, which is, it looks like a plant growing baby's breath. And So don't think that just because you have a pink flower, you then have to find something totally opposite like blue or yellow to mix with it.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I'm telling you, some of the best pots I see are all mm-hmm. different shades of blues and lavenders, all different mm-hmm. shades. I wouldn't put blue and lavender together, and yet I see it, and it looks great.
And when you get one color and you do different tones or different brightnesses of the same color, it really is almost restful for the eye.
Yeah.
When you look at a pot that's got three and four different colors in it's busy. They're bright, it's yeah. busy, and that really, that can serve you, especially at an entrance or at a place where you want it to be busy.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a shade garden out by a patio, if you can find a planter or even perennials out in the garden and you can do different shades of the same color, it really is very restful for your eye.
And some
That's
of those,
a great point.
And some of those colors that I mentioned that you put together, the blue, purple, mm-hmm. you know, this type of thing. I'm not suggesting do that with your curtains and your walls, because it's a different story in the house. It's a different story in the house. But when you're dealing
with... Some people can pull that off.
That's right.
But when you're dealing with plants, man, almost anything goes. It's more about textures and some growing up, some growing down, some growing fat, some growing mm-hmm. tall and skinny.
And shapes and, too, right.
Yeah, and that guara plant, which is a somewhat perennial around here. What a great feller it makes. It grows tall, like almost 2.5-3 feet tall, and yet it's real airy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've my wife doesn't like blocking the window view.
Okay.
But yet I can put guara there because you can just see right through it.
And I've heard that referred to in the common name as whirling butterflies. Is that what you call it?
You know, that could be. I'm not familiar with that term.
Okay.
But why not?
It's a flower on really long stems.
Oh yeah,
and it's very light, and it does look like little tiny butterflies.
They come in a bright pink. Mm-hmm. They come in white. Those are the two main colors. But what a great airy thing!
If you put a spike
in the middle, or actually even one of my favorites, the Angelonia. You put it in the middle, but you can't really see through it if it's blocking your window.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's off against the wall somewhere, well, it's perfect.
Right.
Angelonia, but the guara, very sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
It blows in the wind and just springs back.
Pops right back up. There's no breaking it, right? Mm-hmm.
We want to hear from you today, and maybe we'll modify our topic just a little bit. Not only how do you use colors, what colors do you use, but what do you use them for? As Laura pointed out, if you want a busier palette, maybe at the front door to get people excited about coming over, or maybe you want a calmer backyard, maybe a few cooler hues. How do you use your colors in your outer spaces? Of course, we're always taking your general questions and comments as well. So call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. I know we have a caller on the line. We do need to take just a quick break. Please do stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Carl Hiaasen. His new novel, Bad Monkey, begins with a floating body part discovered in the bay by tourists fishing. The characters include a former detective demoted to roach patrol, inspecting restaurant kitchens, and a monkey who got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Did you know that you can support a significant community service while at the same time raising the profile of your business? You do both when you underwrite programming on WBOI. It's affordable and effective. To find out more, contact Peggy Gaylord at 918-1094.
This program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, announcing this year's Most Improved Campaign Award recipient, GAI Consultants, and Park Center. That's what it means to live united. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Vorderman Volkswagen, a family-owned Volkswagen dealership since 1990, helping to improve the community through personal and corporate philanthropy. Details at VordermanVW.com.
This is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth, and with us this week, Laura Stein as well. We're taking your plant and garden questions at 800-471-9264. You can always email them to middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And we're also talking today about color in your garden and your outer spaces. How do you use it? Do you prefer cooler tones, warmer tones, mixed primary colors? Would you rather use different tones kind of on the same theme? How do you use them and why? Call us and let us know your story as well. Looks like we do have our first caller on the line, so let's open the phones and go to Sue. Sue, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters. Sue, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. On the color thing, I live in a kind of a brown brick, tapestry brick house.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need something to stand out from that. So I use a lot of reds and yellows.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy to see all these tiny petunias and the regular petunias that are now red, you
mm-hmm.
know, cause they
mm-hmm.
have red for quite a while.
No, it's true.
Yeah, and I like to use red, white, and blue, although blue is hard to find. They usually give you a purple petunia to, you know,
and call it blue.
In.
Yeah.
Lobelia is good, but it
yes.
can dry out really easily. I do love the color of it, but that's what I use. And geraniums. I find the petunias and geraniums do better because I get an afternoon sun that is just bakes everything.
Yeah.
You know,
geraniums tolerate drought.
Mm-hmm.
So other than the fact they have to be cleaned, deadheaded.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're a real gardener, you enjoy doing that.
Yeah, and I love pansies. And this year I got a really good mix of the purple, yellow, and some orange ones that really showed up very
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And then white, of course, always shows up.
Sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at the curb appeal thing,
right.
that's what you try to do is get something that will really, really pop, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
When you have a brown brick...
Right.
It can be a really good, that sounds like a great backdrop though for color and for even just green and different
mm-hmm.
shades of green, the chartreuse and the dark green, and it sounds like you're using it really well.
Well, everything's so lush this year because of
yes.
all the rain, I
mm-hmm.
guess, that, you know, I had burning bushes that totally took over and, you know, had to be literally mowed
yeah.
because of all the moisture. But, everything's so beautiful this year. And, of course, the knockout rose, I have a red one. And it just, boy, talk about pop. They're
mm-hmm.
all over town. They're just gorgeous.
Right, against that
gorgeous,
brown.
Gorgeous this year. I have a question. This isn't anything to do with color, but I've been seeing this Korean lilac is what I hear it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the, you know.
It is. It's a Korean dwarf lilac.
And boy, do they grow fast, though. There are a couple in my neighborhood that have gotten huge.
Hmm.
And I noticed even the city has planted a couple in the park strip. And they are amazingly fragrant. And about, what, a month
mm-hmm.
behind the bloom, a month later than the regular lilacs. Can you tell me anything about them, how hardy they are or how to treat them? Or
is this a lilac? It sounds like you're not referring to the lilac shrub, but perhaps
no,
a lilac tree.
No, this is a tree.
Tree.
A tree.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, as far as I know, I'm not an expert on this tree. I believe it's a medium-sized tree, and it blooms white, correct?
White, and it's very strong. Yeah. I mean, it'll knock you over.
And they're blooming now, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
I actually, and a lot of people have these and don't even know it because it seemed like for the last few years they haven't bloomed. And
right.
all of a sudden mm-hmm. this year, everybody's is blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And case in point, I planted one of those in front of my daughter's house several years ago mm-hmm. because it was left over at the end of the season. And I love lilacs. Well, I didn't realize it was going to be white. And it didn't bloom for 2, 3, 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And, oh, my gosh, this year it is just loaded with blossoms.
That's how my neighbors
yeah.
are. And they're just amazing. I mean, you walk by their yards and you just get this whiff of the scent is,
yeah.
well, like the Miss Kim, you know how strong it is,
uh-huh,
too.
Right.
Uh-huh.
It's stronger than Miss Kim, and it's
yeah.
real lacy.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting
well,
tree. Are
a,
they pretty hardy?
They're very hardy. Very
okay.
hardy indeed, and it's been a great year for lilacs.
Yes.
Because of the cooler spring that we've had. It's been a great year. This is, brings up an interesting point. This weather has been great for almost everything. What doesn't like it? The tomatoes and the peppers, they like it hot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
yeah.
working out so well for the things that we really want to see produce tomatoes, but mm-hmm. it'll get hot. They'll
come
along.
The moisture yeah, has been great for,
oh, for everything.
The roses yeah. are just amazing around
yeah,
this town.
Absolutely.
I just enjoyed them. Well, thank you.
Thanks
thank you
for
very
the call.
Much.
You bet.
Sue, we appreciate your call.
Thank you, Sue.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. 800-471-9264 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. You can always email, of course, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And if you'd like to see Laura Stein's photos or share your story on how you use color in your outer spaces, we'd love to hear from you this hour as well. Let's open the phones once again here. Looks like we have another caller. Willie. Willie, you're on the air, and am I right? So you're from Louisville.
That's correct. I'm working. I'm traveling through. I heard your show, and I have a my house is on a cul-de-sac, so I had a very narrow front yard. And mm-hmm. what I ended up doing is putting. And I had a large oak tree. I actually had two at one point. I put one down, so it's shaded. So what I did is I put a stone wall up and terraced it a little bit, and I use foliage to do most of my color on a constant basis, redder and variegated foliage, and then I try to stage the blooming through the year, like obviously tulips earlier, and then like we get lilies now. But I think that it gets, you know, when you're dealing with something where you don't have grass and you're just doing an actual flower garden area like that, it takes a little more time, and that's a whole thing of patience in gardening and to allow the foliage to fill in and do what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do have a question, though, which is not related to that.
Okay.
I can't raise cucumbers or squash because I have these little flat bugs that keep killing everything. And I really don't want to use an insecticide. Is there any other way that I can deal with those in a more organic way to keep them off of there?
Hmm. Well, generally, with bugs, if you don't want to use sprays, there's a couple of things. Hand picking is certainly an organic way to get rid of bugs. Pick them off by hand. We were doing
sounds
that.
Like a little bit. Sounds like a long afternoon, though.
Yeah, so. It could be if there's a lot of them.
We moved a lot of the pots now and trying to do that as much as we can.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I've tried everything. I've wrapped them in foil. Used bone meal. And we've, but those little flat, whatever, those stink, I guess they look like stink bugs is what we always call
yes,
them.
Yes.
They're insatiable.
And bone meal is nothing more than a type of fertilizer. It's not going to have an effect on any kind of an insect. But I was just quickly going to say Dipel is a product. Dipel is a product that they call the worm killer. And I don't know if it would discourage the stink bugs or not. But it's an organic dust that you can dust on your plants.
Mm-hmm.
Laura, what are you
going to
say?
Well, I was just going to suggest since you're in Louisville, you know, things do change a little bit from northern Indiana to there, and I don't know exactly what insects these are, but I would, if you haven't already, I would recommend, taking some of the insects into your local Do you have an extension office or a group
I'm
of
sure we do.
Local experts?
It's more urban there, but I'm sure we have one.
You could probably, and I know the Purdue Extension has presence in every county in Indiana. You could probably hop over the river and
that's probably true.
There's IUPUI campus right there in New Albany.
Okay, and you could get it identified, and perhaps they would have a good specific suggestion that might not involve chemicals, and I would probably focus on that first and see what you can find out in that way.
What we've been trying to do is the ones that survive. We've been trying to pull the seeds from those that can endure it a little bit more.
Oh, that's smart.
And we do a lot of squash, as like we've got a pool area in the back and all that. And when I use it with the elephant ears and all that, I'll use squash as the ground cover around those. You ever seen those little half green, half yellow squash?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are great for ground cover, and they give you a little bit of an ornamental at the same time in the back area. But it just it's one of those things where. They're such a desirable thing, at least as far as my wife and I go, as far as having them, but it's horrible to watch them die.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting thought. You know, you're mentioning using squash as a ground cover. Beetles are attracted to squash. It might be something you wouldn't want to use just to keep from to attracting the bug. In other words, plant something that beetles are not so much attracted to, but... they are attracted to squash and cucumbers and that type of thing. So that's just a thought that popped in my mind. If you don't want those bugs, you might not plant that particular plant. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to let you go, Willie, but it may be a good start, as Laura said, to try to collect a few of those and see if you can get them identified, and then you might be able to take a more specific tact on trying to deal with them.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate all your help. You have a great day.
Thanks for calling. Drive safely.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay. We appreciate the call as always. And, of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners, this hour. If you have a question or comment, it's 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. And if you'd like to add to our discussion of color today, how do you use color in your outer spaces? Do you try to set a certain mood in a certain part of right outside around your house? Do you use it to complement the color of your house? Call us or send us a note and let us know. It looks like we have one more caller we can get to before we have to go to a break here. So let's open the phones back up and go to Tony. Tony, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
How you doing? My color is green. And I have a patio that's kind of sandwiched in between two buildings. It's a paver patio. It's on the north side of my house.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't get a lot of sun.
Okay.
And it's got a tree that arches out over it. Anyway, I've noticed that... last year, I tried to kill the weeds using weed killer in between the pavers.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like the effect that it gave me with just a bunch of brown plants in there. Well, this year, the moss has taken over in the shadow pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real pretty, and it does tend to choke out the weeds. And I'm wondering if there's a way to cultivate it so that I can get it to spread out into the sunnier areas, or... is that not possible?
Hmm. This sounds like a really lovely area. This sounds like an area I really want to go to after work every night. That's shady and has an arching tree over it. And I love moss whenever... I know some people try to kill it and get rid of it, but I'm like you, Tony. I always like to have more moss.
Yeah, if the moss is in the bricks, it looks great.
I think so, too.
The only real danger is slipperiness, but other than that, because if you have moss, it's probably damp. Mm-hmm. And so you do have to be careful about a slippery area, but I love the moss, too. But propagating it on in a sunnier area could be rather difficult.
It is. The sun issue is, you get moss in those shady areas and on the north side, and that's why... for the shade. Now, are you trying to cultivate it in a sunny area? Is it a more sunny place where you're wanting to grow more?
Well, no, but it's all dappled shade.
Okay.
But the closer to the house it is, the more. I mean, it's constant shade. It really doesn't get any sun. But out, the farther away from the house you go, the the more sun it will get. And I'm seeing moss that grows out even clear out there, but I've just, how to get it to spread, how to.
There are a couple things you might try. Now, I remember back a few years ago when growing moss on planters was all the rage, and so there were all these how to do it yourself, these little self-help seminars. So buttermilk on a surface with and keeping it moist and keeping it warm.
Buttermilk, really?
I know. Is that crazy? It sounds a little crazy, but this is what I've heard. So I'm going to throw out things that you can try. The other thing, if it is a sunnier area, there is a plant called Irish moss, and that will grow in the sun. And so it grows in just like little kind of round clumps, and it looks very mossy, but it will grow in the sun. And that's one you can try for those areas that are a little brighter.
And you can walk on it. It's one
you can walk
walkables.
On it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Irish moss.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yep. That's interesting.
And yeah, I imagine the buttermilk, best way to apply that might be with just a sprayer, right?
It could be, or if it's a small, yeah, you want it to be thin. Yeah. Correct. Doug.
I'm trying to keep it into the cracks and not have it take over the patio.
Okay.
And so far, just the sand that's in between the pavers, and we're only talking an eighth of an inch is mm-hmm. all, and that's all the sand there is, but the moss that grows there, all of a sudden it's a half an inch wide, and that's perfect.
Right.
Well, I have a thought.
So maybe if I just pour it on the cracks and leave it there,
or maybe use a brush to
yeah.
apply it, something
yeah.
like that. Yeah,
paintbrush uh-huh. or a spongy brush. You could also kind of dig up places where it's thick. Don't dig it all up, but take little starts from where it's thick and pull it out into those areas too.
Transplant
some.
I had another thought too, Laura. I wanted to run it past you. Moss tends to grow in a high acid area, doesn't it?
I believe that's right.
So what I'm thinking is if he went and got an acid-type fertilizer or an acid-type ingredient and just dusted that on the area, too, to change the pH.
To amend the soil.
Yeah, to make the soil more likable to moss.
That's a good thought. I would want to do a little research on that first, but yeah, that's a good thought.
There has to be something in an offhand, I can't think what, that would make the soil more acidy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, peat moss would do it, but...
And there's lots of soil acidifiers out there.
Yeah, there's other acidifiers to make it more likable to the moss.
I'll tell you what. Unfortunately, we have to take a break here. But let's put it to our other listeners. If you've figured out a good way to propagate moss, and maybe you can give us a hand with this problem as
That'd
well.
Be great.
Yeah, and you can always call us with your questions or comments. And Tony, we're going to have to let you go, but we appreciate the call. And good luck, and let us know how the experiments go.
Okay, thank you much.
All right.
Good day.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to help us out with this problem, or if you have a question or comment, or you want to join our discussion on color in your outer spaces today, call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Stay with us back after the news.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Carl Hiaasen. His new novel, Bad Monkey, begins with a floating body part discovered in the bay by tourists fishing. The characters include a former detective demoted to roach patrol, inspecting restaurant kitchens, and a monkey who got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. The roofs were blown off some buildings in northern Indiana as a storm with winds sometimes topping 60 miles per hour swept through the state. The National Weather Service says Wednesday night's storm caused scattered building, tree, and power line damage, including reports near the cities of Wabash and Rochester. In one case, the roof was ripped from an electronics manufacturing company building in Mishawaka, with the building owner saying much of its machinery has significant water damage. Weather Service meteorologist Nathan Marcelli says all the northern Indiana damage appears to be from straight-line winds. Republican legislative leaders say votes Wednesday to override the governor's veto of a tax bill is not a sign of discord within their party. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Governor Mike Pence last month vetoed a bill that retroactively authorized local income taxes in two counties that were mistakenly collected for several years. The taxes helped pay for county jails. Pence said he believed the money should be refunded to taxpayers. Speaker Brian Bosma says the decision to override the veto was only made after lawmakers worked with the governor on an administrative remedy that would refund taxpayers and make changes to local income tax distributions in the future.
It was very clear that the administrative solution that was available was unwieldy and much more expensive to the state taxpayers than coming in to solve the situation.
Pence still pushed for the legislature to sustain his veto. Senate President Pro Tem David Long says the veto override was a simple disagreement.
Conversation with the governor, I think we all respect each other's positions, and what we did say was whatever happens today, we move forward and united on almost all other issues.
In a statement, Pence says he stands by his veto and regrets the General Assembly voting to override it, emphasizing he still believes taxpayers should receive refunds. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
CTB McGraw-Hill's president is scheduled to defend her company before lawmakers reviewing the iStep troubles later this month. CTB President Ellen Haley is scheduled to testify before lawmakers June 21st. Senate Education Chairman Dennis Cruz said he spoke with Haley Wednesday. Close to 80,000 students experienced problems last month as the state's online test froze up for hours at a time. School Superintendent Glenda Ritz announced Monday that the state had hired an independent contractor to review the results. The first meeting of the General Assembly's iStep Study Committee will come as an independent contractor reviews the test. But Cruz said the second hearing is not planned until after the report is delivered to the state. 19 people were involved in grain bin accidents last year, a Purdue University report shows, and 6 of those were reported in Indiana. But Indiana's numbers are likely more accurate than those reported by other states. Of the 6 incidents in Indiana, 2 were deaths and another 4 were injuries. Incidents have actually gone down nationally since 2010, but compared to previous decades, they've increased. And agriculture professor Bill Field says there's a correlation between how much grain states produce and their number of accidents reported.
We're producing larger crops every year. So we just have more grain we're handling. We've got more storage bins, larger storage bins. It's increased exposure.
But Indiana is an exception. Because Purdue University is located in the state, researchers say they can better track accidents here. The report argues that if all states reported as well as Indiana, their injury rates would double. And it looks like there's some calmer weather to be expected today. This afternoon, we can look for mostly sunny skies with a high near 76. And this evening, you can expect a mostly clear night with a low of 55. You're listening to Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI and online at nipr.fm.
Quarter till 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on WBOY. I'm Sean Beter. We're talking today about, all sorts of things, really. We had an earlier discussion about colors and how we use colors in our outer spaces. We'd love to hear your story. What is your favorite mix of color? Do you use it to set a certain mood in your backyard? Do you use it to complement the homestead? Call us at 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at @middaymatters. And of course, we're taking your general plant and garden questions as well. And if you have grown moss, we'd love to hear how you did that. We had a caller in the last segment who was trying to do that in his backyard, and we'd love to hear your story as well. In the meantime, we have a question here via email from Jackie. Excuse me. Jackie says, good afternoon. I don't know what kind of tree or bush this is. Jackie sent along some photos here. But usually every spring it blooms with really pretty white flowers. This year it did nothing at all. Is it dead? My wife really dislikes mowing around it and wants me to cut it down, but the flowers are so nice in the spring that I hate to do that if it's not dead. Any help you can give would be greatly appreciated. And Laura Stein, you're sitting in front of the computer screen here. Can you describe just a little bit of what you're seeing in these photos?
Well, it looks like a small tree on a single stem, and it looks to be 6 to 8 feet tall without any leaves. And, you know, I have to say the white flowers threw me off a little bit. But, Sean, when you enlarge the photo, I can see some very telltale square stems. And those usually tell us that it is a burning bush. Mm. Those don't tend to have very many flowers in the spring. I know they have a tiny flower, but it's usually not one of the ones we think of that has a really great floral display. Unfortunately, with the burning bush, those have also become invasive in our Northeast Indiana region. The seeds that those flowers turn into have gotten out in the woods. Compliments of our birds. And
thanks, birds.
Yeah, thank you. And they are taking over our natural and wild areas. So you know what that means for me. I say pull it out. Go ahead and get rid of it and put in something better.
And I say pull it out just because it's overgrown. It's just
and it
way
looks dead.
Too big.
Yeah.
And then if it looks dead today, it probably is dead.
It probably is, yeah. I mean, if these are recent pictures, it's dead because there's no, it's not leafing out
always,
at all.
Always right. Listen to your wife.
Is that what that translated
that's
into?
What I got,
Doug,
yeah.
I like the way your mind works, but I didn't know that's what that translated into.
later in the program, relationship counseling on this edition of the program. So your advice to Jackie would be most likely it's dead, and besides it's invasive, so probably work to get rid of it.
Yes, I would.
Doug,
Yeah, I would take it out.
Okay. And Laura, I'm sorry I interrupted you there.
I was just going to say, you know, when I first saw this before you enlarged the photo and I could see the branches, it looked like maybe it was a small red bud. That would be a perfect tree to replace this with. Any crab apples that the berries could eat would be wonderful too. Serviceberry is a great native that would fit very nicely in this area. All of those have great spring bloom and good fall berries.
All right.
Well, couple suggestions.
Jackie, we appreciate the question here, and then very good luck. We have another email question. Of course, you can always email questions or comments to middaymatters@nipr.fm. We have our Facebook page up as well, and you can always send us a tweet. And if you'd like to call us, that number is 800-471-9264. Jack sent along a few tips from, Jack says, can't take credit for the following, got it from ehow.com. So we can throw these out. Number one, and this is regarding moss. Select a well-shaded area that does not receive direct sunlight during the hottest parts of the day. An east-facing hillside or an area shaded by trees is best. Moss requires moderate to heavy shading to survive. Then amend the soil to a pH balance between 5.0 and 5.5. And I see some nodding in the studio. In the studio,
Doug
here.
Called that one.
Doug called that one. To do this, mix water with sulfur powder and place it in a spray bottle. Use a litmus testing strip to test the pH balance of the mixture to make sure it meets the required balance. Transplant the moss to the area where you'll propagate it. Use a spade or shovel to lift the moss off the surface. And place it into the new surface. You can lift as much of the dirt bed as possible with the transplant. Place the transplanted moss on the center of the prepared surface, and then moisten the moss and the surrounding dirt with water for at least the first 3 weeks after transplanting. Use a hose with a misting spray head. Don't saturate the moss to where it rots. Just keep it moist. So the gang in the studio here, sounds good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always forget about sulfur. That's the ingredient that you need.
Yeah, so that's what, it didn't say acidic soil in those instructions, but yeah, Doug called that, and that 5 to 5.5 on the pH is more in the acidic range. So that is what they're looking for.
Yep.
I just wanted to toss out too. Many times when I use a lot of boulders and outcropping stones in my designs and gardens, and if you can find, I'm sure at many of the stone yards around town, but I know Felger's peat moss has great outcropping stones, and many times you can get some with moss on them. So if you're creating an area like this, or if the caller is wanting to add to that area, you can many times find those low outcropping stones already have moss on them, and they look fantastic in places like that. Yeah.
You got to be very careful not to rub it off.
You do have to be careful.
Turn
That's true.
It so that it stays on the shady side of the rock, right? Or it'll just die.
Place it correctly. Yes. Right.
Jack, we appreciate the tips here. And if anybody else wants to share how they propagated moss in their backyard, we'd love to hear your story as well. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Or if you would like to share the story of the colors in your backyard, we certainly hope to hear from you in the next few minutes here. 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall where you can see Laura's photos as well. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Stay with us, back in 1 minute.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Carl Hiaasen. His new novel, Bad Monkey, begins with a floating body part discovered in the bay by tourists fishing. The characters include a former detective demoted to roach patrol, inspecting restaurant kitchens, and a monkey who got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Limited number of tickets are now available for the second annual Picked by the Pros Wine Dinner, Friday, June 21st at the Bergstaff Place, presented by O'Daniel Audi Porsche. Enjoy a wine tasting followed by a gourmet 7-course meal. Tickets are $125 per person or $800 for a table of 8. Purchase online at nipr.fm or call WBOI at 452-1189.
About 6 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on 89.1 WBOI. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday, Midday Matters Outer Spaces. And we'd love to hear from you. We have just a few minutes, so call us at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And Doug, I know there was a topic you wanted to get to, and I rudely cut you off.
Oh, no, no. This is totally off the subject, and we're going to go back to Laura, who's going to talk about her pictures. But I just wanted to mention, because the show's about over, Friday the 13th in June was my anniversary for 16 years of flying the airplane. I got my license 16 years ago today.
I didn't know you flew.
Friday.
How
about that? Yeah. So this is my anniversary for flying.
Congratulations. You get the bird's eye view on the outer space.
And if you didn't know it, the sole purpose of taking up flying was to fly to Mackinac Island and not have to drive there. That was the sole reason I took it up.
Regular listeners to the program will know that Doug has to mention it once per show. It's in his contract.
It is in my contract, right.
Well, congratulations, Doug.
Thanks.
It looks like we have a caller here, so we'll try to briefly open the phones and go to Anna. Anna, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters. Anna, can you hear us?
You're on, Anna. Anna.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm going to lose my signal, so I'll ask my question.
Okay.
I have a beautiful yellow peony bush, and I'm wondering, now that it's done blooming, is it time to cut the real hard stalky things off?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the question. No.
Thanks, Anna.
And if this was a show on pruning, I would have discussed that. Just cut the flowers off. Cut the stem down where the flowers are and leave the foliage grow all summer long. That puts the strength back into the root system, and then do the really hard cut in late summer. Right?
That sounds right.
Sounds good.
Although it's going to die back to the ground and then come up. It's not woody, so I don't know that that is going to make a difference. It's not going to grow up smaller next year.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah. It won't reduce the size of the plant for next year if that's what you're hoping for. If you need it to be smaller, you will have to divide it.
That's true.
But if you can avoid dividing it, I would. Peonies like to be left alone.
Yep. And let's do the hard cut in the fall.
All right. Yep. Anna, we appreciate the call and good luck. We have just about 2 or 3 minutes here. And Laura, we started the show talking a little bit about color, how to use color, what your options are. Any maybe design tips, I guess, for folks who want to add a little bit more color to their backyard in the last few minutes of the show here?
I always think if you're really to get the most out of an area, and if you're wanting to add color for the whole season, really look at foliage color, because that's going to stay with you, of course, from spring all the way to fall. Because the bloom color, of course, is very transitory. It's going to come and it's going to go. And when I sent some of the photos in today, I sent a photo that's got really bright colors, like the deep purple iris, yellow yarrow, and the red rose right behind it. And those are just primary colors, and they're big and they're wow. And those have a really great place in a sunny area.
They each pop on this background of green.
Of green, right, they do. And it's just a great color combination. And then we have big swaths of color. So I have a client and a friend who has just a very large yard. And so what she's done, which makes lots of sense, is to provide the right proportion, she has done, you know, she's got almost this meadow of coreopsis, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's all yellow, and the blooms just keep coming and coming. So it's very nice and very appropriate for the space. Hmm. And then I have, you can see in the planters, these are annual colors. So this is a really sophisticated entrance, and it's a wooded area, so we're kind of bringing up some deeper bright colors and some chartreuse colors against some purple maroon foliage of the sweet potato vine, and then some very deep pinks. But it's really a lot of color and texture in the leaf itself and very little in the flower.
And unfortunately, I think we're going to have to leave it there. But if folks want to get a little inspiration, if they're looking to add a splash of color to their outer spaces or their inner spaces, you just mentioned the planters there. You can go to our Facebook page, see Laura's photos. It's facebook.com/MiddayMatters. I'd like to thank both of you, Laura Stein from Laura Stein Gardens. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Sean. It's nice to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. Appreciate you being here as always.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Sounds great. I'm Sean Beter. Thanks so much to everybody who called in with your questions or comments. I know there were a handful of folks that we couldn't get to today. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 FM HD Channel 1. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Fresh Air is up next. It's 1 o'clock. Have a great day.